When it comes to trade, President Trump has described it as a contest that the U.S. often loses. Throughout the campaign, he often lamented the, quote, bad deals, excuse me, made by U.S. leaders that he believed put American workers and industry at a disadvantage. Here's what he had to say about the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, last June.
I'm going to tell our NAFTA partners that I intend to immediately renegotiate the terms of that agreement to get a better deal by a lot, not just a little, by a lot for our workers. And if they don't agree to a renegotiation, which they might not, because they're so used to having their own way, not with Trump, they won't have their own way, then I will submit under Article 2205 of the NAFTA agreement that America intends to withdraw from the deal.
Yesterday on Twitter, the president said he received calls about NAFTA from Canadian and Mexican officials. Trump tweeted that if he isn't able to renegotiate a better deal, the U.S. will terminate the agreement.
Edward Alden joins us now. He's a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations and author of the new book, Failure to Adjust, How Americans Got Left Behind in the Global Economy. Ted, welcome to Central Time.
Good to be with you, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Well, we've heard pretty consistent language from President Trump and candidate Trump, but there's always been that, are we going to abandon the deal or renegotiate? We saw signs that it might be abandoned as recently as this week. Now we're hearing renegotiate. What do you make of the latest?
Yeah, it kind of went back and forth. There was a story that broke yesterday that the White House was preparing to initiate withdrawal from NAFTA. There's a six-month requirement. Any of the three countries, U.S., Mexico, and Canada can withdraw on 6 months' notice. There was talk that the U.S. was going to trigger that, and then a series of high-level phone calls between Trump and the Canadian Prime Minister and the Mexican President, and now we're back to renegotiate with the threat perhaps to withdraw down the road if the negotiations don't go well.
Well, NAFTA was controversial before it came into existence, really going back to the 90s and I think maybe even beyond. And the message from the president is we're on the short side of this. We're losing to Canada and Mexico overall in trade. Big complicated question, I know, but are we? Is he right?
Well, you know, I got my start many years ago as a reporter actually covering the NAFTA negotiations and the ratification in Congress, which as you say, was very controversial. I've thought about this for basically 25 years, and I think the answer I've come up with is, on balance, NAFTA was probably a good thing for the United States, probably a good thing for Mexico, probably a good thing for Canada. I think all three countries are probably a little bit wealthier than they would be otherwise. But it had significant and concentrated negative impacts, particularly in manufacturing. And those were states, including yours, that voted for Donald Trump in the November election. So I think in some parts of the country, NAFTA has not been a particularly good thing, and those parts of the country aren't terribly happy about that.
In your book, Failure to Adjust, I mean, the title kind of says it all. We didn't adjust to the reality of NAFTA, you write in your book. What didn't we do that we should have that might have protected the people who were hurt by this trade agreement?
Well, I think there were some things that probably could not have been done and a lot of things that could have been done. I mean, we live in a rapidly changing economy. Economies change, factories open, factories close. That's something that goes on all the time. I think there was not an appreciation of how rapidly manufacturing employment would deteriorate in the face of trade competition. And that was actually a lot more China than it was Mexico. You see the real impact in the 2000s. Our retraining programs have always been too small and too late. Economic development, we leave to kind of state and local governments. There's not a lot of effort to try to help communities that lose a major employer. And I think Trump's got a point. I think in trade negotiations, I think at times the U.S. has allowed itself to be taken advantage of and has not enforced these agreements as consistently as it should. Again, especially with China. That's much more the story with China than with Mexico.
Talking to Ted Alden from the Council on Foreign Relations, author of the book Failure to Adjust, looking at international trade, a possible NAFTA renegotiation and beyond. And Ted, let's look at this renegotiation. As I understand it, you think that's not a bad idea. There are things that need tweaking. What should change?
Well, I think there's some things that all three countries could agree on. I mean, you take the area of digital trade, you know, eBay and Amazon and what you do about Facebook and Google and all of that. Those are companies that didn't even exist 25 years ago when NAFTA was concluded. So there are very few international rules for digital trade. That's an obvious thing to do. I think on energy, the Mexicans are far more open on energy than they were 25 years ago, much more willing to cooperate on that front. I think those will be things you could do fairly easily. I think, you know, things to kind of facilitate cross-border movement of goods, speed up customs procedures, all that stuff. I think environment and labor standards are another area. NAFTA, for the first time, required countries, and this was aimed at Mexico, to do a decent job of enforcing environmental and labor standards in their countries. The NAFTA provisions were actually pretty weak. They were the first go at this. The modern provisions and trade agreements are much better. I think the Mexicans would probably go along on that. Those are easier things. There are also a whole bunch of harder things that the U.S. will ask for and the other countries will resist.
We're seeing some of that harder stuff over that last week with threats of timber tariffs, wood coming across the border from Canada, dispute over dairy, important here in Wisconsin, some farmers losing at least temporarily the market for their milk. Are those some of the thornier issues?
Yeah, those are a couple of good examples. I mean, dairy is a third rail in Canadian politics, partly because a lot of the dairy farmers are in Quebec. Quebec is tremendously important politically in Canada. Canada has a very closed dairy market. Wisconsin farmers have managed to take advantage of what was a little opening that the Canadians have now largely closed. That's a really, really tough issue. That'll be a big one. I think you look at timber. Timber's an old dispute, goes back to the 1980s, but the Canadians have always dealt with this by challenging the United States through the dispute settlement provisions of the NAFTA. And generally, the Canadians have won and kind of forced the U.S. to negotiate compromises on timber imports. The new Secretary of Commerce, Wilbur Ross, has said he thinks those dispute provisions are unfair. They're rigged in favor of Canada. He'd like to see those changed in the NAFTA. The Canadians will resist that very strongly. Yeah, so those are two good examples of issues that are going to be hard ones.
Unfair trade is kind of hard to quantify, it seems like, because you could say, okay, protective tariff, that seems like an obvious thing. You're making the foreign country's goods cost more. But then if you're subsidizing an industry with cash payments or with tax breaks, is that unfair competition? If you're requiring, say, pipelines to use only U.S. steel, is that unfair to foreign steel makers? How do we quantify what is unfair trade?
Yeah, those are great questions. You know, you go back to the trade agreements of 30, 40 years ago, it was all about cutting tariffs. That's pretty straightforward. You can quantify that. These things are much harder to quantify. I mean, you look at subsidies to corporations. The Chinese are you know, do this more probably than any other country, gives their companies a significant advantage. It's been very hard to crack down on. You know, your question of other sorts of subsidies. What about tax incentives? You know, U.S. states, including Wisconsin, will offer big tax breaks to companies in order to invest there. Is that an illegal subsidy? Well, some cases, yes. The World Trade Organization has ruled against the state of Washington over its big tax breaks to Boeing. So that's a tough one. Government procurement. I mean, we generally accept that there's some areas, largely for national security reasons, that we want to see domestic production. But, you know, commodity sort of steel for pipelines, generally no. Trade agreements say you should buy that from the lowest bidder. But the rules vary all over the map. So that's a great question that gets into why these agreements are so difficult and contentious. And also, I might add, given that this is a big Trump priority, time-consuming. It is not easy to renegotiate a trade agreement.
Well, we've bailed out on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but that wasn't, you know, it wasn't a done deal. It wasn't doing stuff yet. We've been in NAFTA, as you said, for more than a couple of decades now. President Trump left the door open. If he doesn't like the deal, he gets to leaving NAFTA. What does that mean for the U.S. economy? There's so much economic stuff that goes on where a part might be produced in one country, processed in the next, shipped back to another one. What happens if we are just out of it?
I mean, there are some industries where it will be enormously disruptive. The auto industry is one, because the supply chains, as you suggest, are fully integrated across the borders with Canada and Mexico. Parts go from one country to another. They get assembled into final products. So that'll be extremely disruptive to the U.S. auto industry, and I think you'll see a big pushback from the car companies if we go down that road. Border states, I think particularly along the Mexican border, you know, you talk to anyone in Texas or Arizona or California, transport industries, warehousing, distribution. There are a lot of jobs associated with trade with Mexico. You look at something like clothing, historically clothing tariffs are pretty high, and they still are, for instance, on clothes that come from Vietnam or Bangladesh. If you snap back to those higher tariffs on clothing coming from Mexico, that's going to cost U.S. consumers more in the Walmart and elsewhere. So, the disruptions are going to be pretty significant if you go down that road. Business is adaptable. Companies will figure a way around it, but for certainly a period of time, it's going to be highly disruptive.
We're talking to Ted Alden, senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, looking at President Trump's plans to renegotiate NAFTA, or if he can't get a good deal, he says, pull out of NAFTA altogether.
You can join in by calling 800-642-1234 or by posting on the Central Time Facebook page. Tell us what you think of NAFTA and whether or not it should stay as is. Do you want to see NAFTA terminated or renegotiated? Do you see the trade deal affecting you personally? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We pick up our conversation now with Ted Alden, senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. We're looking at President Trump's plans to either renegotiate NAFTA or, if he can't get a good deal, pull out of the trade deal altogether.
And we'd love to hear from you at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. What do you think of President Trump's plans on trade? Do you think NAFTA should be renegotiated or maybe ultimately terminated? Tell us why or why not. And are you concerned about U.S. relations with neighboring countries under Donald Trump? Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Ted, I wanted to ask you about sort of the non-economic side of these trade deals. President Trump definitely is looking at who's winning, who's losing. Is there some room to consider the diplomatic impact of positive trade deals with neighbors, allies around the world, and maybe making sure they have stable economies?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question, and historically that was a very high priority to the United States. It was, one of the reasons we kind of opened our market asymmetrically to a lot of other countries. We lowered our trade barriers more than they did because we wanted to see the economies of our allies develop so that they would resist Soviet communism, for instance. I mean, if you look at what happened in a lot of the rapidly growing Asian economies during the 70s and 80s, that was a lot of the story. With Mexico, Mexico is politically was not particularly democratic for a lot of its history. It was not terribly stable. One of the goals under NAFTA was to try to create greater political stability in Mexico, which it certainly has done for a time. There are questions about whether it will continue, but I mean, Mexico has been a more functioning democracy since NAFTA was negotiated. So there are always broader political issues here. If you looked at how the Obama administration tried to sell the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the top line was, who's going to write the rules of the future, the United States or China? So it was very much about who's in charge in the world sorts of considerations, not just economic ones.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We have Roger on the line in Green Bay. Roger, hi.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. My thoughts on NAFTA are, and first of all, let me say that I can remember very vividly back years ago when NAFTA was put into effect or just before it was, I can remember vividly seeing President Clinton and Vice President Al Gore on television with big smiles on their faces chanting, NAFTA, we have to, and I was appalled. NAFTA is not about helping America. It's about helping Mexico. It's about helping anybody else but. And I would like to see NAFTA abolished, or if President Trump can renegotiate so that it's a fair playing field, that's fine too. But I have no patience with NAFTA. And in conclusion, NAFTA, no, we don't have to.
Roger, thanks a lot for the call. Strong feelings then and now. And yeah, I mean, I remember at NAFTA, it seems like that was what led to the rise of Ross Perot, a wealthy independent political candidate at the time. Union conflict with the Democratic Party over this. This still hasn't gone away, Ted.
No, it has not gone away at all. And I remember back covering the confirmation process for NAFTA in the Congress in 1993. I mean, Bill Clinton split with his own party. There was a majority of Democrats, and a lot of them led by the Midwestern Democrats, who were just as staunchly opposed as your caller continues to be today to NAFTA. Clinton decided for a variety of reasons that he wanted to move forward on the agreement, but it really split the Democratic Party and I think, you know, made union voters in particular much more suspicious about whether the Democrats had their back. And, you know, we saw in the last election a surprising number of union voters turning to back Donald Trump instead.
And you, I think you write in your book, this goes back even further to the 1960s and John F. Kennedy freeing up trade, unions on board then saying, okay, yeah, we'll feel the benefits. But again, that we didn't adjust, we didn't take into account the disruption, and that led to this long-term dissatisfaction from unions and other industrial workers.
Yeah, it's an amazing transformation that I read about in my book that took place, you know, less than a decade. You know, 1962, the AFL-CIO was enthusiastic about trade expansion. Their argument was the rest of the world is more closed than we are. We have the best workers. We have the best companies. We open up new export markets. That'll be a great thing. 10 years later, we've suddenly got this flood of imports coming from Japan, and the adjustment programs that Kennedy promised, trade adjustment assistance and other things to help workers who lost their jobs, turned out to be stillborn. There was really nothing there. And so, you know, by the late 1960s, the unions would say, look, we got to stop this train. And they've been opposed to these trade deals ever since.
Thanks for that call, Roger. We're talking to Ted Alden, author of the book Failure to Adjust, How Americans Got Left Behind in the Global Economy, looking at the politics and economics of NAFTA, maybe going to be renegotiated. If not, maybe abandoned. Back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Marcy is with us in Green Bay. Marcy, hi.
Hi. I was just calling because I think that whether or not the NAFTA trade deal, I mean, I think there's pros and cons to all of it, but it seems that President Trump is continually looking for someone to be cast as the bad guy, the villain, and it's sort of a hangover from what made him so successful. It's why he continues to go back to his campaign rallies, and he talks about Obama a lot, and he talks about Hillary a lot. It seems very funny that, like, Canada and Mexico are now these new sort of villains in our international trade peace, and to be cast as such rather than to try to find people in North America that we can work with. It's the modus operandi that Trump has about having to have somebody be a bad guy so he can be the good guy, I think can be very counterproductive, even when he comes up with ideas that maybe do need to be looked at.
Marcy, thanks a lot for the call. And Ted, I've seen some people read it just like Marcy does. I've seen some people say, well, this is Trump negotiation style. You go in on the attack, and then that's how you start the negotiation. What's your read on that?
Well, you know, I think that's a really insightful comment that your caller made. And I think, you know, what everyone needs to ask themselves is, well, what does he want and what is he actually going to get? One of the odd things about this administration and NAFTA so far is it's all tactics and no strategy. You know, are we going to pull out? When's the negotiation going to start? They haven't actually said what they want to get. And to the extent that Trump is concerned about strengthening manufacturing in the United States, which I am too, I think that's a good goal, he's really has to explain to voters, to his voters, where does the trade piece fit into that? What else is he going to do to attract foreign investment in the United States? What is he going to do to make sure that the workforce has the skills for those jobs? You know, a lot of modern manufacturing is very computer intensive. It's not the you know, manual labor jobs of the 70s and 80s. It's not the old steel jobs. These are modern automated factories. And if we want Americans to have good jobs in those factories, they have to have a set of skills that's very different from the ones their fathers had. So he hasn't talked about any of that stuff. And I think, unfortunately, it's often easier for him to just say, well, you know, other countries are cheating, and if they stop cheating, everything will be fine. Well, that's not realistic. That's not the way things are going to work.
Marcy, thanks a lot for that call. That reminds me, Ted, I've seen arguments on both sides of this that, okay, trade is what's cost a lot of manufacturing jobs versus automation. And some people saying, okay, great, you bring manufacturing back to the United States, we're not going to have anywhere near as many jobs as we used to because it's so automated.
Yeah, I think there's no question about that. I think if you look at the 2000s, it was both automation and trade. And when people forget kind of changing consumer preferences, you can just buy only so many refrigerators and cars. We spend our money on services of one sort or another. So I think automation is a big piece of it. I think, though, if you think about it from the perspective of the person who loses their job, it probably doesn't matter, right? If you lose your job to import competition or you lose your job to a robot, you're unemployed just the same. And the question is, what do we need to do to try to help people make that transition successfully, to find new jobs that pay well, to get the skills that allow them to do that, to encourage investment in our communities that are going to create those kind of jobs? And Trump just hasn't laid out a strategy like that at all.
Has anybody, as we start to wrap up, do you see positive signs that we are actually trying to do that kind of adjustment?
You know, I see a lot of state and local governments really doing it. I think, you know, if you talk to any governor in the country, that's what they see as their job. State and, you know, local economic development agencies. I would love to see the federal government do far more to get behind the efforts of state and local governments to do these sorts of things. So, yeah, I can give you a bunch of examples from around the country of where those things are happening, but they don't have the resources behind them that a federal presence would bring.
We'll leave it there for now, Ted. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good to be with you, Rob. Thank you.
That's Edward Alden. He's senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. He's the author of the new book, Failure to Adjust: How Americans Got Left Behind in the Global Economy. He joins us to talk about President Trump's plans to either renegotiate or to get out of NAFTA.
Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, this weekend marks the first 100 days of the Trump presidency. We'll look at what has and hasn't been accomplished, and also how it sets the stage for the rest of his term.
We'll talk to the author of the book Plugged In and find out how the internet age media draws in the attention of young people, and then what kind of impact it has on the young people using the phones, the internet, Netflix, and more.
And on Food Friday, we'll find out how to make bread the easy way. Our guests share some no-need recipes and some delicious recipes to serve this bread with. There is focaccia, food cart grilled cheese sandwiches, lots of delicious recipes to learn about tomorrow.
That's all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9, it's the Joy Cardine Show. Tomorrow after 8, it's the Week in Review. Joy gets two perspectives on the top state and national news stories of the week, including a look at the latest tax plan outlined by the Trump administration. That's coming up tomorrow morning after 8 here on the Ideas Network.
Coming up next, it's the news from NPR and WPR, and then we'll learn about proposed legislation that would give witnesses and victims a say in whether body cam footage they're in would be released to the public. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.